Stay tuned for the Connected Kingdom Podcast, connecting truth with life in a digital world. Yeah. Here are your hosts, Tim Challies and David Murray.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Connected Kingdom Podcast. I'm here this week again with my good friend Tim Challies and a guest, Alex Chediak, Associate Professor of Engineering and Physics at California Baptist University. Probably many of you will have heard of him through a very popular book that's been recently published, Thriving at College. Alex worships in Cornerstone Fellowship Bible Church, and we're very glad to have him with us today. He's married to, didn't get the name of your wife, Alex?
It's Marnie. With an N-I at the end.
Okay, yep. And three children, Caris, John, and Abigail. Welcome to the podcast, Alex.
Thank you, David.
Tell us, first of all, before we get into your book, let's get into your life. Tell us briefly how you came to know the Lord and maybe got into your calling of teaching at a Christian university.
Sure, David. First of all, thank you much. Thanks so much to David and Tim for having me on your podcast. I've enjoyed hearing it several times over the internet. Thank you for having me. I came to faith as a teenager, about 13, 14 years old, through the influence of my mother, who had come to faith herself only about 3 years prior and was taking us to a small church in the Chicago area where we grew up. And I was also going to a Christian camp in the summer. And so through those combination of influences, I came to faith in Christ. Went to college in engineering in the East Coast and proceeded there to work as an engineer for a few years after graduating also in the Northeast. I was working in the Vermont area and went to college at Alfred University, which is in western New York. After about being in Vermont working as an engineer, I sort of missed school. I was one of those strange people who, after graduating and working, kind of wished I was still in the academic world, and I loved to teach, loved working with people, students in particular. So I began to tutor just on the side of my work, and had good affirmation there about teaching. So I began to develop in my own heart the desire to go back to graduate school and be a professor in a Christian college, work with students. I was thinking Christian college even then, simply because I thought I'd be able to integrate being a spiritual influence to students as well as using my academic background in engineering a little more easily at a Christian school. And also I had interests in doing things like writing some beginnings of aspiration even in those days. So that was kind of where that came from. Graduated in 2004 from UC Berkeley. Had read a lot of John Piper through that time, went to Minneapolis, did the apprenticeship program in those days. Now it's called the Bethlehem College and Seminary. Then it was more of an apprenticeship program in those days. And then was teaching at Northwestern College in Minneapolis area part-time then, and then now full-time here at California Baptist University.
And I go back a little ways in that it's been a few years we've had the privilege of blogging the Ligonier National Conference together, which has been kind of fun for the two of us, splitting up responsibilities there. It's been a good time. Now, I want to ask you a really broad question, but, you know, I've recently released a book too, and I know that when it comes to interviews, it's always great just to be able to say, here's what my book is about. So just give us the big picture in just a couple of minutes. What's the book all about?
Yeah, so Thriving at College is the name of the book, and it's really about making the college years a launching pad into responsible Christian adulthood, with all that that means. So the book really tries to run the gamut on the college experience: spiritual development that I would hope occurs, relational development, academic development, and professional development. So topics ranging from not just keeping the Christian faith, but growing deeper in it and seeing all your life as being integrated from the Lordship of Christ, the academic life under the Lordship of Christ, a relationship life under the Lordship of Christ. Topics like embracing responsibility, loving God with all your mind, and seeking to go to class to honor him by developing your intellectual abilities, growing in character and maturity in the way you deal with people in your class, on sport teams, professors, striving for academic excellence from the standpoint of wanting to, again, not from an empty worldly professionalism, but from the standpoint of God's given me a responsibility here to honor him as a student. My job right now in life is to be a student. I want to honor him with excellence in the classroom from a Colossians 3:23-24 perspective. You know, whatever you do, work heartily as unto the Lord, not unto men. So from that kind of vantage point, seeking to honor the Lord in the classroom, balancing work and recreation, finding your calling. In other words, choosing, not just choosing your major, but really trying to understand what is it that God's called me to do? How has he wired me? How has he uniquely gifted me? And in that process, not just looking internally at my own desires, but externally at the feedback that I get from others, including my parents, but also my professors, as to what I'm good at and have success at. Establishing godly friendships, both with the same sex and the opposite sex. Handling the transition from high school to college, so realizing how college is different than high school, managing time well, being disciplined, including financial discipline, and then also honoring your parents while cutting the cord and developing a godly independence and godly adulthood. So all those topics find
a place.
All right,
sounds like the flying overview there. Now,
there you go.
Let me ask you something. Well, let me relate my experience with college, and maybe you can tell me if this is typical and if this is the kind of book I should have read, okay? So I went off when I was about 17, maybe getting towards 18. I went off and did just a three-year BA and just kind of took class. I didn't really know what I was doing or why I was doing it, but hey, I had to go to college. Everyone else did. So I went off, got my BA, worked at Starbucks for a while, went back, did a computing degree, and now I'm pastoring and writing books. So it seems that there's kind of this disconnect right from the beginning. Why am I actually even here other than everybody goes off to college, or at least middle class people in my neck of the woods go to college, and so I went.
Right.
So I guess what I'm asking is, how would your book have benefited me if I had read it when I was 17 years old?
Yeah. I started off in the preface saying very much the same thing. I went to college by default. I think a lot of people like us, Tim, and we go to college by default. It's whatever other people do, and it's what seems the normal thing to do. And so I think what Thriving in College seeks to do is give a perspective to the student as to the college experience. Really, college is a temporary season of academic preparation and growth so that you can serve God more effectively for the next 50 or 60 years. So what you study is in some ways of secondary importance to the way you study it, to the way you approach learning in general. Developing your mind, learning how to think will serve you no matter what field you go into. Because, for example, I think you studied history. Is that right, Tim?
That is correct. Yeah, I studied history.
Yeah. So some people would ask, well, what did that matter? Tim isn't really doing history per se right now. He later on did computers, and now he's doing pastoring and writing books. You know, a lot of people now change careers in their 20s and 30s. And so sometimes people will ask me in class, you know, when am I ever going to use this knowledge? I'm teaching them how to perhaps draw a free body diagram so they can analyze a block sliding down an inclined plane and how it accelerates over time and gains velocity. And they're wondering, you know, this is totally irrelevant to my life. I'm not going to go into this. When am I ever going to use this stuff? And what I try to help them see is, hey, the way you approach this is either honoring to God or dishonoring to God. Really, you might not use this information directly, but you're going to use the skills you develop indirectly, because you're really in college to learn how to think so that you can, for the rest of your life, increasingly love God with a well-trained mind. So having a well-trained mind in history is giving you the kinds of skills that were later able to serve you in many ways as a writer. So I think Thriving at College, to answer your question, is really going to give you a perspective as to what is the purpose of college and how do I find my place in this college environment as a Christian wanting to glorify God. How do I best utilize the college experience for maximum value?
So if I had read your book, I probably wouldn't have dedicated so much time to learning how to use the internet and playing euchre.
That I would hope would be the case, yes.
I think you also said earlier there, Alex, that Tim doesn't do history now. And, you know, most people would say he doesn't have to because he's making it, you know, every day. Tim Challies is making history.
That's true. That is true in his case.
Yeah. So, Alex, one of the things I really liked about your book was it wasn't just focused on maintaining faith at college. I think a lot of parents view college as, well, you know, if they can get out of here with minimal debt, get a piece of paper, and they're still at least interested in church and God, hey, that's a triumph. And I liked how your book said, look, that's just such a negative, insular, narrow view of college. Tell us, you know, what's the great vision of college that you want people to have?
Yeah, so I think you're absolutely right, David. A lot of people, I remember when I went to college, a lot of parents, I went to a non-Christian college, and I remember a lot of people in my home church were just warning me, hey, be careful about the party scene, be careful about the wrong crowd, be careful about drugs and failing your classes and all this. And I think that's well intended. I think it's good for Christians to have concern for young adults going off to college. But the big vision of thriving at college is that that's really too low of a goal to hold out to our young people. It's the vision of thriving at college is that college is not just about keeping the faith, but digging deeper than they may have thought was possible. It's not just stumbling upon a major, but really discovering your calling. How did God make me? What did God wire me to do? Not just having fun with friends, but really cultivating the kind of lifelong relationships with those who are going to help me to trust God, to love God, to obey God with more vigor, and to really put away any childish remnants that are still hanging on to my life, playing too much euchre, was it, on the computer, Tim? Whatever
lots
it was.
Of it.
I think lots of it, yeah. To make wise choices, to as missionary William Carey once said, to expect great things from God and attempt great things for God. So to really make the very best of the college experience. You know, college is the one phase of life where you really enter in many ways as a child under your parents' home, and Lord willing, you graduate ready to launch into the adult world, to work a job, to balance your checkbook, to balance your social life with your professional life, to set expectations with your employer and to keep those expectations, and to really be a functional, godly, God-mastered adult, not dependent overly on your parents, but really ready to go into the world and make a difference. So that was the vision for the book.
Interestingly, Alex, I never actually went to college straight from high school. I really hated school, every second of it, apart from the soccer classes. And I just wanted to make money, so I went into the business world. And really, it was only when I was converted and saved that I began to think about, you know, how to develop my mind and how to use my mind for the Lord. So I went to university actually when I was about 22 or 23. So I went with sort of 5-6 years maturity and business experience compared to most students. And I have to be honest, my sort of instinctive reaction to all these 17, 18-year-olds was, I don't like them very much. How do you love students?
It's a great question. You know, I think what I try to do, that question was a question that was also asked at an interview before. And I think that's the most important thing about a professor is that his students know that he loves them, that he or she, the professor, loves the students, really wants the best for them. I think what I try to do is with God's help, see the potential in those students. If they're unruly, if they're undisciplined, if they're not mentally engaged, what I try to ask myself is, look how great they could be if they only applied themselves, if they only tapped into their God-given potential, how wonderful they could be, not just in my class, but in all their classes and in all their activities and responsibilities. So I think it's helpful as a Christian to see not just where they're at, but where they could become. And then to say, what can I do as a professor today to make a small investment to help them get there? How is the way that I teach physics going to provoke them and stimulate them to love and good deeds in all their activities? How am I going to make them a better Christian and a better student by the way I do what I do? So I think and then I try to see the best in them, see the potential in them.
Well, congratulations, Alex, if you can do that. Thankfully, the work I'm involved with is usually much more mature men. They have a much stronger sense of vocation, calling, responsibility. It's a lot easier to love. in that situation. But let me ask you a question. I think is the same really around all higher further education institutions at the moment. I think it's annoying professors and teachers a lot. How do you get students to take notes? You mentioned this in your book, the importance of taking notes. I think from talking to most professors, teachers, they're sitting in classes, they're pouring their life into this, and they're just being met with either blank stares or heads into the notebooks and off onto the internet.
Yeah. So I discourage computers from coming into my class.
Okay.
And there's no, they have no pedagogical function in the way that I teach. So that does help. So what I do just practically is I do use PowerPoint, which some people are nervous about because students could just tune out and just look at the screen and fall asleep. But what I do is I print them a notebook at the beginning of the semester, and it has my PowerPoint slides on the left side. On the right side are blank lines where I expect them to take their notes. I tell them, you will learn if your pencil writes things down, the chance of your brain remembering it go up by a lot. And so I tell them participation in the class is going to be part of your grade, and participation is more than attendance. I need to look around the room and see you engaging with me. And you may raise your hand and ask something, or more often than not, I'll call on you randomly when you least expect it and expect you to have an answer. And so doing that a few times will sort of shame the ones who are falling asleep, if you will, and soon they get the drill. And they, if someone drifts away and falls asleep, I definitely call on them. And it's noticeable. Among 30 people, it's pretty embarrassing, and it doesn't happen again. So I tell them on the first day, I'm going to do these things for your good, and usually kind of ratchets up the expectations on the part of the students to what they're going to need to do.
So you're the kind of teacher I did not approve of.
That is correct, probably.
Yeah, I want you to speak to the parents for a minute. I know obviously when a younger person decides to go off to college, it's always or usually a joint decision with the parents. How can they decide whether their child should go off to college or when he should go off to college? And I know at least in this area, there's been a lot of talk lately about we don't need to be sending everyone off to college. The trades are a great place to make a living. And some of these other things you don't need training for. So why are we sending everyone off to college when they may never use it? Or maybe they're not ready. So they go off like I do and just kind of waste 3 years without really getting the benefit they could. So when should a parent say, you know what, you're great, off you go to college, and here's how to choose one?
Yeah, you know, just some statistics that people might want to keep in the back of their mind. Right now, at least in America, I don't know what it is in north of the border, Tim, but down here in America, about 70% of high school graduates go immediately to college. However, about 30% of those will not make it to their sophomore year. They will drop out somewhere along that way, and somewhere between 40 to 50% of them, so almost half of them, will never graduate. And so financially, this could be an issue in terms of maybe you get loans to go to college like most students do. Now you go there for a year and you say, it's not for me, or I didn't pass my classes, and now you're out of college, but the bank still wants their money back. So financially, you're in a deep situation where now you're starting off your adult life in the hole financially, and you don't have the skills that college was supposed to give you. So I'm totally in support of students being ready to go when they go. I think if an 18-year-old is not ready to go to college, meaning they're not ready to subject themselves to being a student as a full-time job. I tell students, if you're a full-time student, school is a full-time job. When you come to my class on Monday for an hour and you come back Wednesday for an hour, I expected you to do things in between. You aren't just responsible for what you hear in class. You're responsible for what I told you to do outside of class. So if a student isn't ready to be a full-time student, meaning work 40 to 50 hours on their academics, they probably should take a year off and decide, you know, is this right for me? Or maybe get some maturity first and then go back to school. Oftentimes, David, like you were saying earlier, oftentimes the 19, 20-year-olds are heads and shoulders above the 17 and 18-year-olds in terms of maturity and preparation. So I think a parent can look at their young, their son or their daughter and say, you know, are you really willing to go study 40, 50 hours a week? Do you have that level of desire? Also, have you had a modicum of success in high school? I think sometimes we push people on to college who, let's be honest, high school didn't work out too well for them academically. They're going to be much better served going into a trade or a discipline that's going to be outside of the academic sphere and not be saddled with a bunch of debt and perhaps fail in college. If you didn't do well in high school, your chances of not passing in college go up dramatically. That shouldn't be surprising. So I think those are the kind of questions that parents can work on with their kids.
Yep, I'm totally in agreement with these questions. I think a lot more parents and children should be asking them. I'd love to see you write another book, How to Thrive Without College. Because
yeah.
I think a lot of people today think that's impossible. You know, you don't go to college, well, your life's over. Or you don't thrive in college, your life's over. And I really like the increasing trend of people saying, hey, you know, it's just not worth it. I'm just not getting return on dollar here. And I think people like that PayPal founder has given people $100,000 not to go to college. I think we'll see more of that. I wish it was around when I was leaving school. But,
yep, absolutely.
Let me just ask you a couple of things that were a wee bit controversial in your book, at least for young people. No boyfriend or girlfriend
sure.
in the first year of college.
That isn't something I say dogmatically. what I'm saying there is it may be a good idea for many students to first spend some time figuring out who they are before they latch on to a boy or a girl. Because I think what happens sometimes is people get to college and never in your life have you been able to live, you know, all week long around in the midst of, let's face it, a large number of attractive candidates for boyfriends or girlfriends. And so it's very easy to get into a relationship too quickly and to, in a sense, fall in love with the idea of a person rather than the actual person. So now you're spending – I've seen this happen many times where freshmen come in and within 2 weeks are spending every waking moment with some significant guy or girl, and they aren't able to develop a healthy social life or a healthy academic life because – their entire emotional investment is going to one person, whereas the majority of students are finding lots of friends. They're finding clubs to get involved with. They're finding a church to plug into. They're finding study groups. They're in a healthy way transitioning into the responsibilities and the freedoms and the opportunities of college. So to get too far too fast with one guy or girl, that's the danger I'm concerned with. Now, I don't want to be overly dogmatic about it because the honest truth is God may open your eyes to a great person that first year. And I don't want to, you know, in a sense, put God in a box and say that God can't open your eyes to someone who's your future spouse at the age of 18. I'm just saying take it easy because the reality is you have 3 more years to go before you can graduate and really begin to develop financial independence, for example. So take it easy because if you burn out, it's not going to be helpful for that relationship.
Okay. One last question from me and then one from Tim. You see in the book, if you're living as an adult with mom and dad enjoying the blessings of food and shelter that they make possible, you should be working at least as much as they are. Are you serious?
Yeah, I am. Because here's what happens. Right now we have a third of men in the ages of 22 to 34 that still live at home with their parents. So that this is one third of a population that has historically been ready to get married, live on their own, pay their own bills, and basically be adults. So my concern is that people graduate and they move back in with mom and dad, and they kind of unconsciously or unintentionally slip back into child mode, if you will. They're in their parents' house, the bills are being paid, the heat, the utilities are all working, the internet's working. This is great. And all they have to do is get a part-time job, and they can pay for their entertainment, and now this is a wonderful, comfortable life. Who would want to leave?
Yeah,
now I realized right. What's that?
Sounds great.
Yeah, and I realized because of the economy, the way it is now, sometimes people have to move back in with mom and dad. And I say that there are good reasons to move back with mom and dad in order to have their company, to get a little bit of help getting off on your own financially. But I think it's wise for the adult child to pay some form of rent to their parents and to be working as hard as mom and dad. Perhaps they only have a part-time job, while the rest of their time could go into maybe filling out applications for graduate school or getting volunteer hours in their field or doing something to develop themselves to the point where they can move out of the home in a reasonable amount of time. They shouldn't be so comfortable that they just fall into a cocoon of blessing and they're not moved to adulthood. Mm. So those are, I think they should work as hard as mom and dad. And the work can be a job. It could also be academic work, work that will develop them professionally and responsibly towards adulthood. They should be passing through unless unusual circumstances are in place. Like perhaps mom and dad are very sick. Then maybe they stay there and take care of their parents. And they should pay rent to their parents and have adult responsibilities in the home. They should be treated like an adult. Yeah. Otherwise, they may not become adults.
A cocoon of blessing. I like that statement. Alex, our time is short. Just one more question. Yeah. I know the book was on sale in the Kindle format last week. Is it still there for cheap?
It's the $2 Kindle sale is over as of last night.
Ah, too bad. But it is available wherever fine books are sold. It's available in all the ebook formats, and people can find it at Amazon, Westminster Books, any of the other places people shop, correct?
Correct.
Good, good. Well, Alex, thanks for being our guest today, and thanks for talking about college. I can't imagine going back. I've occasionally tried to take some courses, and I'm just not an academic, but I admire those of you who are, and I'm grateful for your time today.
Yeah, thanks, Alex.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for joining us. I must say, I'm definitely going to be recommending this book to every person I know going to college. I think churches should buy batches of them for their young people, even a couple of years before college. I think they'd make great youth group, you know, Bible study books. So I think it's great. I'm thankful to you for writing it, and I hope you'll get many encouragements from it in the years ahead.
Thank you, David and Tim, for having me. If I may make just one small commercial, David, following what you just said, there are group discounts and case discounts through my website, alexchediak.com, if people are interested.
There you go. Thanks, Alec. Every blessing.
Thank you, David. Thank you, Tim.
All right. Thanks, Alex.
You've been listening to the Connected Kingdom podcast with Tim Challies and David Murray. Yeah. You can subscribe to the podcast via iTunes or join the discussion on our Connected Kingdom Facebook page.